Lord, thank you that you hear our prayers, whether they are out loud or whether they are just between you and us. If you've got Bibles then, Daniel 5, if you're using these ones, it's page 898. King Belshazzar gave a great banquet for 1,000 of his nobles and drank wine with them. While Belshazzar was drinking his wine, he gave orders to bring in the gold and silver goblets that Nebuchadnezzar, his father, had taken from the temple in Jerusalem, so that the king and his nobles, his wives, his concubines might drink from them. So they brought in the gold goblets that had been taken from the temple of God in Jerusalem, and the king and his nobles, his wives and his concubines drank from them. As they drank the wine, they praised the gods of gold and silver, of bronze, iron, wood and stone. Suddenly, the fingers of a human hand appeared and wrote on the plaster of the wall near the lampstand in the royal palace. The king watched the hand as it wrote. His face turned pale, and he was so frightened that his knees knocked together and his legs gave way. The king called out for the enchanters, astrologers, and diviners to be brought, and said to these wise men of Babylon, "Whoever reads this writing and tells me what it means will be clothed in purple and have a gold chain placed around his neck, and he will be made the third highest ruler in the kingdom." Then all the king's wise men came in, but they couldn't read the writing or tell the king what it meant. So King Belshazzar became even more terrified, and his face grew more pale. His nobles were baffled. The queen, hearing the voices of the king and his nobles, came into the banquet hall. "O king, live forever," she said. "Don't be alarmed. Don't look so pale. There is a man in your kingdom who has the spirit of the holy gods in him. In the time of your father, he was found to have insight and intelligence and wisdom like that of the gods. King Nebuchadnezzar, your father, the king, I say, appointed him chief of the magicians, enchanters, astrologers, and diviners. This man Daniel, whom the king called Belshazzar, was found to have a keen mind and knowledge and understanding, and also the ability to interpret dreams, explain riddles, and solve difficult problems. Call for Daniel, and he will tell you what the writing means." So Daniel was brought before the king, and the king said to him, "Are you Daniel, one of the exiles my father the king brought from Judah? I have heard that the spirit of the gods is in you, and that you have insight, intelligence, and outstanding wisdom. The wise men and enchanters were brought before me to read this writing and tell me what it means, but they could not explain it. Now I have heard that you are able to give interpretations and to solve difficult problems. If you can read this writing and tell me what it means, you will be clothed in purple and have a gold chain placed around your neck, and you will be made the third highest ruler in the kingdom." Then Daniel answered the king, "You may keep your gifts for yourself and give your rewards to someone else. Nevertheless, I will read the writing for you. I will read the writing for the king and tell him what it means. O king, the Most High God gave your father Nebuchadnezzar sovereignty and greatness and glory and splendor. Because of the high position he gave him, all the nations and peoples of every language dreaded and feared him. Those the king wanted to put to death, he put to death. Those he wanted to spare, he spared. Those he wanted to promote, he promoted, and those he wanted to humble, he humbled. But when his heart became arrogant and hardened with pride, he was deposed from his royal throne and stripped of his glory. He was driven away from his people and given the mind of an animal. He lived with the wild donkeys and ate grass like cattle. And his body was drenched with the dew of heaven until he acknowledged that the Most High God is sovereign over the kingdoms on earth and sets over them anyone he wishes. But you, his son, O Belshazzar, have not humbled yourself, though you knew all this. Instead, you have set up against the Lord of heaven. You had the goblets from his temples brought to you, and you and your nobles, your wives and your concubines drank wine from them. You praised the gods of silver and gold, of bronze, iron, wood and stone, which cannot see or hear or understand. But you did not honor the God who holds in his hand your life and all your ways. Therefore he sent the hand that wrote the inscription. This is the inscription that was written: Mene, Mene, Tekel, Parsin. And this is what those words mean. Mene, God has numbered the days of your reign and brought it to an end. Tekel, you have been weighed on the scales and found wanting. Peres, your kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and the Persians. Then at Belshazzar's command, Daniel was clothed in purple, a gold chain was placed around his neck, and he was proclaimed the third highest ruler in the kingdom. That very night, Belshazzar, king of the Babylonians, was slain, and Darius the Mede took over the kingdom at the age of 62. Right, big long story, let's just do a little recap as to what happened. So let's just have a little think about some of the things that were going on here. Big banquet. It says 1,000 nobles. How many people in here? 1,800 maybe when everyone was in here, something like that. So this is a big old banquet. This is, I don't know whether we'd fit 1,000 people in here standing up. I guess we would. This building, crammed, you would fit 1,000 people in here. All of these people are sat down. Remember, they wouldn't have had chairs. They'd have had cushions on the floor. This is a big old space where these people are partying. And they drank wine with him. There's no mention of the food. I guess wine was the most important thing that night. And then the nobles are there, and Belshazzar just starts to do like really weird, culturally inappropriate things. He brings women into the room, and not just his wives, but his concubines. And this party, I'm guessing, would have been a bit of a wine-fueled mess. This isn't a royal thing with gold knives and forks and, hello, pass the sherry. It's not that kind of thing. This is a mess. Now, I'm imagining that the mess that was happening, Belshazzar suddenly goes, oh, I know what would be brilliant. Let's really rub it in the face of our heritage. Let's really rub it in the face of what my dad stood for. Let's really rub it in the face of everything our culture talks about. Let's get those goblets. Let's get the gold and silver goblets. You know, the ones we're not supposed to use. I'm the king. I can do whatever I like. So the gold and the silver goblets that were kept safe that no one was supposed to touch, he then starts to drink out of. And this isn't, oh, cheers. This is drinking with his wives and his concubines and whoever was still there. I imagine getting enough gold and silver goblets to feed that number, to serve that number of people would have taken a while. And I'm imagining that this will have gone from being an evening party into a nighttime party, into a midnight party, into the sun coming up party. This is important. I'm imagining that this is now almost the next day and the party is still going on. Now, I don't want to do down miracles. Please, if that's the impression that I'm going to leave you in a second, it's not. But I do like the idea of working out how miracles could have happened. So bear with me, because I haven't got this from anywhere else. I've just come up with this myself. There's some writing on the wall. I imagine that the partygoers didn't realize the sun had come up. They didn't realize it was daytime because the room was dark. It says in the text that there is a lampstand. There was a need for light. There was a need for candles. And I'm imagining by 5, 6, 7 o'clock in the morning, the candles have long gone. The room is dark. And so the hand writing on the wall can just be seen. It doesn't need to be bright. It can be seen on the plasterwork. Now, here we go. I wonder, and I have got a little bit of a backup for this in a second, but I wonder whether it was sunlight outside and the sun was streaming into the kitchens. Now, in between the kitchens and the banquet hall, there wouldn't have been glass windows. You wouldn't have been able to see in to check when you were next needed. And I do wonder whether there was a spy hole. A spy hole so that the people in the kitchens could see in to work out when they were next needed. And I do wonder whether the sun streaming in onto a wall in the kitchens was then projected like a pinhole camera in reverse onto the wall. And the reason I wonder that is because meeny, meeny, tekel, parsin are 4 units of measurement. A mina, M-I-N-A-H, is about 0.5 kilogram. And I'm wondering whether it's a recipe that's being written on the wall. I wonder. Now, I don't care if it isn't. If it really is a supernatural hand writing on the wall, that's brilliant as well. But I just wonder whether it's a recipe from the kitchens turning up on the wall. Now, I'm not belittling that at all, because it happened then. Something massively, massively, ridiculously unlikely happened then. And I know that in Christian circles there has been this word which has been used, which is Godsidence. You know, the idea of an arranged coincidence that happens. So this incredibly unlikely thing happened then. This incredibly unlikely thing happened then, and the king saw it. But I do just wonder if that was what it was about. Now, meeny, meeny, tekel, parsin. Have you seen this? The thing with a pinhole camera is that when it turns up on the wall, it's upside down and the wrong way round. This says meeny, meeny, tekel, parsin in Aramaic, but it says it back to front and upside down. Now, if we go back, now you can see what I'm doing. You can kind of read that, kind of. If this was meeny, meeny, tekel, parsin, written in Aramaic, it's hardly a surprise that nobody understood what it meant. And it would have potentially been someone who spoke that language, a Jew, who would have understood what it meant, like Daniel. Now, again, that doesn't belittle any of this, please. That is not what I'm going for. Because this incredibly unlikely thing, with Daniel being incredibly unlikely to be in that place at that time, and only the king to have seen it in the first instance, all of that stuff just is a coincidence that God has made happen. And an unlikely thing that happens at exactly the right time is just as miraculous as a supernatural thing. But just for me, it helped just going through this process of working out what it could be. Now, my second point about all this is this. Meeny, meeny, tekel, parsin. It means half a kilogram, a pinch, and 10 grams. Daniel interpreted that in a life-changing way for the king of a nation. The king of a nation with a God history that he had abandoned. Daniel interpreted half a kilogram, a pinch, and 10 grams as a message for a king that would then be understood, and he would get a massive promotion. All of these things are a miraculous story. Well, let's just think about what Daniel did. Daniel saw God in a recipe. Now, it's dead easy for us to see God when we see amazing things happen. But how much more amazing would it be if we could see God in the everyday? Psalm 19 starts like this. The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day they pour forth speech. Night after night they display knowledge. The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day, they pour forth speech. Night after night, they display knowledge. How about in our lives, if we were able to say, this traffic jam declares the glory of God. This bit of paper I've found in my pocket proclaims the work of his hands. This television program pours forth speech. Night after night it displays not. I just wonder whether we could look for God in the boring, in the normal, in the mundane. Whether it's a supernatural thing, whether it's a supernatural thing drawing something on the wall, or whether there's a physics-y explanation, of course I'm going to like that. It's still God at work. It is still God arranging something incredible that something incredible can come out of. But at the end of it, if those words really mean what they're supposed to mean, Daniel says they mean these. Numbered, weighed, divided. That is what Daniel says these words mean to the king. And fair enough, that's right. His days are numbered. He has been weighed and found wanting. His kingdom will be divided. But actually, where he has got it from is from three really mundane everyday words. Half a kilogram, a pinch, 10 grams. Now, when Pete has been, some of these things are around the side of the room. This one here says intentional faith development. Intentional faith development. Now, what I would like to do for me from what I'm talking about now, and hopefully you'll join me in this, is the idea of looking for God just in everyday stuff. When we see something, just have a little bit of a, thanks God, that's amazing. When you sat down, these chairs didn't collapse. Thanks God. When we walked into here, somebody had already made the kettle. Made the kettle, what am I talking about? Somebody had already made the tea and the coffee. Apart from the person who made the tea and the coffee, and they had all the stuff ready for them to go. Just thank you. Praise God for the straightforward things. And then the next step, like Daniel does, is looking for messages in those in those mundane things. There was a lad at university who I discovered later ended up getting married to this girl in this story that I'll tell you. And the way they met was that she dropped a bus ticket out of her bag. And he said, "Is this yours?" That was their meeting. That was their moment. It was just built on the mundane. There was no, our eyes met across a crowded dance floor or anything like that. It was just built from something mundane. The relationship that we have with God doesn't need to be built on stars in the sky, the beauty of a flower. It doesn't need to be built on those things. It can be built on a recipe. It can be built on something you happen to have seen on telly. It can be built on something that you noticed that you hadn't noticed before. Because the other part of this story is that idea of the writing is on the wall. It has become a phrase in our culture, the writing's on the wall. It means that something has happened, which means that bad things are about to follow. The writing is on the wall. There is a phrase that isn't from the Bible, but I'm going to use it because it seems to work for me, and it's worked in various assemblies and stuff that I've done at school. And it goes like this. If you don't change direction, you're going to end up where you're going. So if you don't change direction, you're going to end up where you're going. Now, I hope that for those of us who proclaim Jesus as our Savior, for those of us who call ourselves Christian, brilliant, we've chosen a direction. And the ending up where you're going is going to be with Him. But if there are parts of our lives where we have chosen a different direction, for that part of our life, we're going to end up where we're going. I'm a bit more dramatic about this when I talk about this at school. Talk about some of you, you've chosen a direction, so you're going to end up happy and in a lovely job with a nice house. Some of you, the direction you've chose, if you keep on going in that direction, you're going to be in prison. Now, I'm hoping that isn't the same for you folks. Let's see. But if you don't change direction, you're going to end up where you are going. Is there something in your life where the writing is on the wall? And that, are you okay? Are you okay? If the answer is, yeah, I am actually, then there's another mundane thing to be grateful for, to thank God about. If there are some choices that you have made, or some directions that you are heading in that aren't God directions, are you okay? Are you okay? And if that means talking to somebody here, if that means talking to somebody that you trust, if that means talking to somebody that you love, then do that. If it's somebody that you love, they only want the best for you. That's me kind of done. I'm going to just... No, I won't read through the story again. It's a big, long, old story. Daniel 5. Read through it. See what else you can figure. See what comes to you. I don't want to explain miracles away, but I quite like the idea of God not bending the rules. They were his rules. I like the idea of miracles happening within the constraints that he's made for himself. I like the idea that meeny, meeny, tekel, parsin just could be somebody writing stuff on a menu or a recipe. And I like the idea of Daniel being able to use that to influence the king of a country. I like all of that. If it turns out I'm wrong, and God tells me when I meet him, no, it was a supernatural hand, do you know what? I couldn't be happier. But I reckon Daniel uses something mundane to do God's work. We can see God in the stars, we can see God in flowers, we can see God in looking at the construction of human beings. Can we see God in receipts? Can we see God in traffic jams? Can we see God in stubbing your toe? You know, there's just, the whole of our life is a complicated thing full of loads of stuff. Intentional faith development would be for me, and for those of you who want to join me on this, the idea of noticing God in the mundane bits and pieces as well. If we can only encounter God when something spectacular happens, then maybe we have to force ourselves to remember that most things we see are spectacular. We take for granted so much. Maybe it's time to just notice God in things that are seemingly mundane and giving God thanks and praise for the stuff that just seems ordinary. I think I've said everything. I had prayed for sunshine at 11:30. I think actually the sunshine is just, the sun's there. So the sun actually is never going to come into this building particularly today. I was just going to say that this idea of light appearing on the wall, God uses light quite a lot to show, to do miraculous things. There's a time where the shadows go the wrong way up a staircase. There's rainbows in the sky. Jesus described himself as the light of the world. Jesus described you as the light of the world. Jesus uses optics, and within his rules, I reckon Daniel got to use something fairly mundane to do something fairly spectacular. So I'm going to pray, we'll sing a couple of songs, and then we can be thankful for the tea and the coffee that have been provided for us. Dear Lord, thank you for this story. Thank you for the detail in this story. And thank you for what this story might mean to us. Thank you for Daniel's bravery. And thank you that seemingly he saw you in something quite ordinary. Help us to see you in every aspect of our lives. Help us to be thankful and grateful for all of the little things you give to us. And help us to get messages from you from really, really straightforward things. Amen.